While Brent led that song, I took my boots off and changed shoes and I put my tennis shoes on. And I put my tennis shoes on because I want to be prepared to run and run as fast as I can. Now, you may be looking at me and thinking, you know, running fast and that guy, I'm not sure I can reconcile those two things. I actually got a really nice compliment several years ago. I was a head men's counselor at Camp Zenith at Oklahoma Christian. And some of my leading male campers decided that it was a good idea to go get in the water fountain in front of Oklahoma Christian at 1:30 in the morning. So when I got out and saw them out, of course, they scattered like quail, and I chased them back to the dorm, and they were out of breath, and they looked at me, and they said, "You run really fast for an old man." I took it as a compliment. I have my tennis shoes on this morning at this moment, because I want to run and run as fast as I can. And when I finish this morning, I hope I am not the only one eager to put their tennis shoes on and run as fast and fast as you can as well. In 1997, Mitch Albom wrote the book entitled Tuesdays with Maury. It became a best-selling book. It was on the New York Times best-selling list for weeks and weeks. Mitch Albom's a really good author, and that's a really good book. In more recent years, I believe it was 2017, Albom was interviewed by a group of individuals, and during the course of the interview, he was ridiculed. Ridiculed because he emphasized the value of a father's presence and influence. And they just tore him apart simply because he talked about the inherent value of a father's presence and influence. Albom did what any good author would do. He had a written response. And I want to share with you a little portion of his written response to this particular interview. Here's what he says. "I can cite a few things that I got from my own father. Strength, quiet confidence, discipline, responsibility, and love. All displayed differently from my mother, which was fine. My father also taught me how to be a husband, how to respect a woman, when to lead and when to support." He goes on to say, "It's true. Not all men are like my dad, but plenty are. And fatherhood didn't suddenly, after thousands of years, lose its value. It may be trendy to dismiss dads as little more than fertilizer, but it's not true. In fact, it's pretty foolish." I remember someone from my childhood frequently saying, "He needs his father to do that." It was my mother who said that frequently during my childhood. What a solid tribute. What a solid tribute to his father. Obviously, his father did a lot of things right as he was growing up. But one quote I appreciate in particular, he says, "Fatherhood didn't suddenly, after thousands of years, lose its value." I want to make two very quick observations before I go any further saying anything about fatherhood this morning. The first observation I want to make is, I readily acknowledge this morning that this is potentially a very sensitive day for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. I made the same observation last month on Mother's Day because I realize it brings to the surface a lot of emotion, a lot of feelings based on your own personal circumstances. As I look back at my own formative years, one particular evening stands out. The summer after my sophomore year in high school, one of my running buddies came by to pick me up. We were going to go play tennis that night. And he told me as we were driving to the tennis courts, oh, by the way, my father was arrested last night. He was arrested because in a drunken rage, he assaulted my friend's younger sister. She was 14 at the time. We were 16. And I was a little puzzled because this is a professional man. He had been a career military officer, was retired from the military, but still a professional. And here's a guy who ultimately went to prison, charged with aggravated sexual assault. I was so incredibly naive at 16 because I honestly and seriously did not know that fathers were capable of such things. I had no inkling. I was clueless, so naive. And literally overnight, my friend, whose name is also John, became fatherless. 4 months earlier, that same year, it was 1978, my own father passed away very unexpectedly. And here we were, John and John, sitting in the cab of his pickup that night, both fatherless for very, very different reasons. And I share both of those events because I believe you can count on me this morning to speak with great sensitivity as I reference the role of fathers. I realize there are so many different scenarios, so many different personal situations that each of you are facing. The second observation is a related thought. Fathers are in short supply these days. There is an acute shortage of fathers. I had a conversation with Billy Martin before Bible class this morning. He really helped me in my sermon, didn't even know it. Billy told me he heard a statistic this morning on the news that in the United States, there are 18.5 million fatherless children, more than any other country in the world. We are the leading nation. Wouldn't it be nice if you could order a father from Amazon and get prime delivery at that? Here's the father I want. Here's the prototype. I'm going to order this guy from Amazon. He'll be here tomorrow. If not, he'll at least be here by Tuesday. Right, delivered on my doorstep. I read an article several years ago about a group of young 20-somethings, and they were going to have a barbecue, and they put an ad of sorts on social media advertising for a dad to come to their barbecue because they wanted somebody to cook hamburgers and hot dogs and talk about dad things. And it was all kind of funny, and it became viral, and people started talking about it. And it's amusing in one sense, but in a way, I looked at it very differently. It was sad because it means that this is likely a group of 20-something young men who had no dad among them who could come to their barbecue and cook hamburgers and hot dogs and do things that dads do. There is most certainly an acute shortage of fathers among us. So here's what I'd like to do this morning. I want to do something just a little bit different this morning. I want to speak to the fathers among us. And I want to encourage the rest of you to overhear as I speak to them. Sometimes overhearing is even more powerful than being spoken to directly. Dads, I'll make this promise to you. I am not going to hammer you this morning. Oh, here's a little secret about preachers. Preachers characteristically do what on Mother's Day? Oh, we honor our mothers. And then June rolls around. What do? The dads. We hammer the dads. Not going to do that. Dads, you're not going to get hammered this morning. I want you to know you are valued and you are most certainly needed. As Mitch Albom very appropriately pointed out, fatherhood didn't suddenly, after thousands of years, lose its value. There is a mission for you, should you decide to accept it. I'm going to read a portion of the parable of the loving father in Luke chapter 15. Not going to read all of it, just a portion of that parable. I'd like to encourage you this morning just to listen and listen very carefully and listen to the parable through the ears of a father. And even listen from the perspective of the father who is portrayed in the parable. I'll begin in the second half of verse 11 in Luke chapter 15. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger man got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate." What's the primary message of the parable? One of the things we should do before we even entertain the idea of what is Jesus really trying to get across? What's he trying to convey? What is the primary central message of the parable? And you have to have an appreciation for a little short dialogue that occurred just prior to the parable being told before we can have a full appreciation of what he's trying to say. First two verses of Luke 15. "Now, the tax collectors and sinners were all gathered around to hear him. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So Jesus proceeds to tell not only this parable of the loving father, he tells two other parables. He tells this, the parable of the lost sheep, where this shepherd leaves the 99 and goes after the one, and then tells a second parable regarding a lost coin as well in Luke chapter 15, verse 8, because he's trying to communicate the inherent value of every single created person and the love and concern that God has, God the Father has, for every single individual. The parable of the loving father. It's powerful and drives the point home really well. So therefore, this father who ran when he saw his son, this father who is filled with compassion, is a symbol of our Heavenly Father and a symbol of the mercy and compassion, the openness, the willingness to forgive that God demonstrates toward us. What I'd like to do this morning is focus exclusively on one thought in the parable, and that is this. The father ran. He ran to his son. He ran. And just a little quick crash course on Jewish culture. Proper Jewish men didn't run. That was sort of unheard of. That would have been, people around would have shaken their head. What is he doing? But he ran. And the truth is, you would too. You would in a heartbeat. If your son or your daughter had gotten in themselves into some kind of big mess, you would run, and you would run as fast as you possibly could. But here's where we find ourselves. 18.5 million fatherless children in our country. So many young people. So many small children. So many teenagers that are fatherless. And the question I'd like to pose to us men, who will be there to run to them? Who will be there to run to them when they're trying to find their way back? Who will run to such precious souls created in the image of God? Here's the answer. You'll be there. And I will join you. I'll be there. Those of us who are already fathers will be there. Those of you who are young fathers will be there. And those of us who have grown children will be there, because I'm convinced being a father is a calling. It's an identity thing. It's you're a father. You are a father. You are a father, period. End of story. It is a calling. And those of us who are old guys, those of us who have adult children, I think we know a little bit about being a father. We've had a little experience. And the other thing is, we've made our share of mistakes. Some of us have made more than our share of mistakes in raising our own children. Men, we don't have the luxury of sitting around. We don't have the luxury of leaving our boots on. We need to take our boots off and put on our tennis shoes and be prepared to run. These are desperate times for children. These are desperate times for fatherless children. Good men like you are in very short supply. We can't walk. We must run. These are desperate children looking for someone who will step up and be a father. Men who are certain of their calling, called to be a father. I've been thinking about events of the last several months, and some of you have shared in these events with me. I've been thinking about mentoring at Granbury Middle School this last spring semester. Boy, that was an eye-opening experience. I haven't been around middle school kids in a long, long time. It's been a while. And believe it or not, I'm going back for more. We're going back for more in August when school starts on the 16th of August. You know what one of the most fun parts of mentoring was for me? Is watching other men. Watching other men with their mentees as I'm sitting here waiting for my student. I'm kind of listening to a little bit of this interaction and observing just the demeanor, just the whole experience. And I'd walk away thinking, you know, I'm around some real pros. I worship with some really fine men who are unselfish and giving and totally invested. There are additional plans that are in the works, even as I speak, that are going to occur across the street at Granbury High School during the course of this school year. It may look a little different than what we're doing at GMS, but it's definitely in the works. I suspect that several of us have even individuals in our own extended families who are fatherless. And my guess is you could have some dialogue with anybody who was a part of the staff at Royal Family Kids Camp this past week. And they could tell you some stories that will curl your ears and really make you think about who we are and what we're doing. I always have appreciated the fact, I think God has a sense of humor. Are y'all convinced of that, that God has a sense of humor? He created us with a sense of humor, isn't that true? So since God created us with a sense of humor, God must have a sense of humor. When I went back to school at age 52, which is kooky in the first place, when I went back to school at 52 in 2014 to work on another master's degree in clinical mental health counseling, I had two objectives. I wanted to be better qualified to work with ministers because ministers need good counseling, especially somebody who's been there and done that. That was my first objective. And my second objective was to work with first responders. That's been my experience over 30 plus years. I thought this will be great. And I've had those opportunities since I finished that degree work in 2017, but here's where I know that God has a sense of humor. When I did my internship in 2016 and 17, my internship was focused on working with juveniles who were on probation. All these kids were felons on probation. And when I was approached about that internship, I told the juvenile probation officer, I don't want to do that. That's not my forte. And she twisted my arm. It ended up being a fantastic experience. And since I graduated in 17, God keeps bringing me kids. That's not why I went to school. I had no interest in working with kids. I even told that probation officer, I'm not even sure I like kids. I'd just gotten my youngest out of the house. I'm an empty nester. I don't think I like kids anymore. And God kept bringing me kids, and God keeps bringing me fatherless kids. And sometimes my reaction is to run. But my reaction is not always to run towards those kids. It's to run out the back door right there adjacent to my office. I want to run the other way. And God keeps bringing me fatherless kids as recently as last week. Is it really important to run to these kids? I think the repeated theme conveyed in each of the parables in Luke chapter 15 is the value of one person. Early this morning, I got up and was just glancing at social media to make sure the world was still in one place. Isn't that where all good information comes from, is on social media? And a friend that I went to elementary school with that I've known since 1969 shared this status update. She came from a very, very extremely abusive home. And she says this, quote, "Happy Father's Day to Mr. Leroy Bethke. In my heart, you are and always will be my father. You showed me what love was really about. You had this quiet, loving soul that made me feel wanted and safe and loved. I miss you a lot lately." Leroy Bethke, that she refers to, was her foster dad, who brought she and her siblings in and raised them until they graduated from high school and totally changed the direction of those kids' lives. I guess somebody equivalent to a caseworker with Child Protective Services in the state of Wisconsin must have called early one morning and told the Bethkes, "We have this sibling group of kids, would you take them in?" And they put on their tennis shoes and they chose to run. Men, what do you bring to the table for children and teens? Do you bring strength, quiet confidence, discipline, responsibility, and love? Can you teach a young man how to respect a woman, when to lead, and when to support? Men, will you put on your running shoes and join me? Let's run, and let's run fast. Thank you for your time this morning.